Welcome to the show. I'm Jordan Harbinger. As always, I'm here with producer Jason DeFilippo. On the Jordan Harbinger Show, we decode the stories, secrets, and skills of the world's most brilliant and interesting people and turn their wisdom into practical advice that you can use to impact your own life and those around you. We want to help you see the matrix when it comes to how these amazing people think and behave. We want you to become a better thinker. If you're new to the show, we've got episodes with spies and CEOs, athletes and authors, thinkers and performers, as well as toolboxes for skills like negotiation, public speaking, body language, persuasion, and more. So if you're smart and you like to learn and improve, you'll be right at home here with us. In today's conversation, Laura Gassner-Odding. She caught my attention because of her no BS way of communicating and backing up her ideas and skills with real practical strategies you can use in order to carve your own path, whether that means a pivot in your career and your job or something new entirely. We'll discuss why we sometimes make ourselves miserable because of the way we define success and chase happiness instead of fulfillment, and what we can do instead. This is a really useful episode, especially if you're wondering if what you're doing with your life right now is really going to be something that fills you up at the end of the day, or if you're just chasing the success dragon, so to speak. If you want to know how I managed to book all these great people and manage my relationships using systems and tiny habits, check out our 6-minute networking course, which is free over at jordanharbinger.com/course. By the way, most of the guests on the show that you'll hear, they actually subscribe to the course and the newsletter. So come join us and you'll be in great company. All right, here we go with Laura Gassner-Odding. So I normally don't ever start a show this way, but I happen to never a good sign, by the way, when a host says that. You said your audience is primarily made up of millennials and Gen Xers who want to improve their lives. True. They are educated, they are affluent, and they have choices. True. But why does somebody who's educated, affluent, and able to pivot listen to a show that engages on topics about improving their lives? And you say, because with all this success, they aren't actually deeply happy. And I'm like, well, I'm not sure I agree about that, because so people who are happy then conversely go, I don't need to improve myself because I'm deeply happy, so I'm never going to work on myself.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that they're really happy and they don't want to do anything and they're fine.
There's that.
They're not. The thing is, happiness is a temporary state. Right?
Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah, you know, I can be happy if you give me a chocolate cake right now, right? The woman who walked in with Girl Scout cookies that looked pretty good.
I think we could take her.
We could take her, the two of us, definitely, for sure. But I think that you can be happy in a temporary state, and then we hit these milestones, right? Maybe it's an age that has a zero at the end of it. For me, it's the fours and the nines, right? And you have those like, oh God, I have another year, and then it's going to be a big five or a big zero. Am I in the right place? Am I doing the right thing? Am I married to the right person? Am I living in the right house? Do I have the right job? And those are those moments of self-assessment when you're like, yeah, this is what I was supposed to be doing. I did all the right stuff. I went to the right schools. I got the right job. I got the right title. And I created the life that on paper looks really good, right? It's supposed to make me happy. It's like a look good goal. One of those goals we put on the wall, like on our vision boards.
Is it weird that I don't have those thoughts? Like I'm like, oh, 40, people will finally take me seriously. Which, by the way,
well, I think that's also
part of the problem. Yeah, because when I was 30, I was like, ah, no one's going to be like, you're not old enough to be a business owner. Now, of course, all of these quote supposed entrepreneurs are like literally 11 or 19 or 22. So now I'm the old guy, which is good, but it hasn't really worked for like people taking me seriously.
Yeah, I think that's why you keep your hair short on the sides, because I think it's really just gray. It grows out.
It's edgy. Oh, yeah. No, it's also gray. It's gray. It is gray.
I've exposed you.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm exposed. Literally, I went to get an emergency haircut yesterday because my sides were really growing out. And I was like, damn, I look old.
Yeah, they're going to think I'm old. I'd like to think you have got the haircut for me. You wanted to like up your game.
I barely remembered I even had this until about 10 minutes before you showed up.
Man, well, I was late. So, you know, I got 5 minutes on you there. But I think here's the thing. I think that when we spend our lives pursuing success as identified by everybody else, we get to a place where we're like, on paper, it looks perfect. And then we're like, well, I don't know. Why am I not happy? Why am I reading all these self-help books? Why do I go on Instagram? Why do I look at memes of girls in flower crowns staring out into the sunset? Because there's something that's not there. And that's why we have this middle-age crisis or a quarter-age crisis, or we have, you know, boomers that aren't letting go of leadership because they're so afraid of what's over the other side of the cliff that they're afraid to
over
do it.
Over the hill, if you will.
Over the hill. Yeah. So, I don't know. You don't have those ideas. You don't have those thoughts. That's great. It's probably because you have at every turn in your career made specific decisions about things you wanted to do. I mean, you're a podcaster. You spend your days interviewing people about subjects you find interesting.
True.
So you have always pursued curiosity. You've always pursued interest. You've never shied away from, here's a subject I don't know. Here's a topic I don't know. So that in general, that's going to lead you into places where you're constantly growing and changing and learning. Mm-hmm. It's when people aren't and they're just pursuing the title or, you know, the title on the job or the title of the car or the title of the house, whatever that title may be, they're not stretching themselves and not asking, is this something that's really interesting to me? Or is it just something that someone else told me to pursue?
Sure.
You can't be insatiably hungry for someone else's goals. And I think a lot of people are in a place where they've been handed somebody else's goals early on. You've spent your career pursuing your own mm-hmm. and finding interesting things. So it's not surprising to me that okay. you don't have those.
Well, that's good. I was wondering about that because, I mean, I did end up a lawyer because, you know, one aunt who's like a gym teacher was like, you should be a lawyer because you argue a lot, which like isn't real advice from somebody who you should be taking advice from.
I had a fourth grade teacher who told me I was very argumentative and that I'd be a good lawyer. So right. I went to law school also.
Yeah.
Except I dropped out. But,
well, you know. You're ahead of the curve.
Well, yeah. Or maybe I just got worse grades my first year.
That's also very possible. That does weed out a lot of
well,
us.
I smoked a lot of weed. That really is what weeded me out of the first year of law school.
Yeah,
but then I joined
yeah.
the Clinton administration. So, you know, that worked out well.
So, yeah. And then all your weed was free.
We all inhaled. It was great.
Yeah. Well, your book centers around many questions. But one that I noticed was, what if success and happiness were like two different things? What if success didn't equal happiness? Am I saying this right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you mean by that then for the listening audience? What does that mean?
It means that you are going to spend your life trying to be successful, right? We all want to be successful, but where do we get the idea of what success is? So, right, you had an aunt who said, you're argumentative, you should be a lawyer. Yeah. I had a teacher who said, you're argumentative, you should be a lawyer. When I dropped out of law school and I joined the Clinton campaign, I ended up in the White House. And when I was there, I met and began to date the man of my mother's dreams, right? Success. Marry the nice Jewish medical mm-hmm. student and, you know, nice guy, good family, good teeth, all the rest. Except there was no chemistry at all, right? Every time I kiss him, it'd be like, I got to pick up the laundry. I got to get the dry cleaning. Like he was success on paper, mm-hmm. but it wasn't success. It wasn't making me happy.
Do you think he read the book and is like, God, I'm getting wrecked? Because you bring up that example. This isn't the first time I've seen that example.
Yeah, no, but it's a good example. We've all yeah. been there, right? Where you've got, I'm going to fix you up with so-and-so. And
yeah.
it's like for the life of you, you're just not that exciting. Right?
Sure.
You just can't get with it. And I think, I wish I knew his last name. I really
do. Okay.
I wish I could find him. I don't know what his last name was. I wonder whatever happened to him. He probably made somebody else very happy,
yeah,
but he wasn't going to make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are probably a lot of your listeners who were sitting in the corner office, who were driving the fancy car and who were like, okay, this is what I was supposed to be doing, right? This is success.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I'm not really cut out to be a lawyer. I wasn't cut out to work for somebody else. I'm a serial entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I like being in control of my destiny, even if it's scary as can be and I have no idea if it's going to work out or not. I'd like to know that I'm placing a bet on myself. If I'm going to work my ass off, it's going to be for my own interests and my own dreams and my own goals. And I'm going to be the one who defines what quality is in the work that I do, not somebody else. And so I think this idea that there is success is based on this idea that somebody else is defining it for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we just can't pursue that and expect that that's going to be fulfilling to us individually because
sure.
we're all individual.
So if we are doing work and we feel stuck, even though on paper we look like we should be crushing it, you think that in all likelihood, that's a problem of how we've defined success, or maybe we haven't bothered to define it. We just let other people define it for
us. It's precisely that.
Okay.
I think that we let other people define it. You know, there's a moment when you're like 15, 16, 17 years old where somebody says, pick a path, pick a major, pick a college, right? Pick a job, pick a trade, pick something. And you're like, yeah, okay, awesome. And then you go and you do it. And then about 6 years later, you develop a frontal lobe,
mm-hmm.
you know, like
totally.
The actual part of your brain that helps you make good decisions. So how are we supposed to make these decisions that are going to affect the rest of our lives before we literally have the capacity to make good ones?
Seriously. So, yeah. Like I should have gone to college when I was 30, not
yeah.
when I was 19.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So like you're picking a major based on what? Based on what your parents tell you should do? Based
yeah.
on what your aunt tells you should do? Based on what some random teacher tells you should do? How, like, we're not even fully developed yet. So you don't know what you're good at. You don't know what you love. So that's the first thing is that we don't define it for ourselves. And then the second thing is, even if we do it, we don't give ourselves the grace to look back and say, maybe I want to do something else. Maybe
mm-hmm.
I'm a different person, or maybe I'm in a different season of my life right now.
Yeah, we get some cost, right? Like, I can't just do that now. I went to law school. What are you talking about? I can't just like quit everything and start a business. I didn't need to go to law school for that. I didn't even need college for that. And I went through that thought process. And then I was like, yeah, but what am I going to do about that?
Right.
Just keep working in the legal field or just start now. Can't go back in time. But I think a lot of people go, I'm not wasting this education.
Right. So you're going to say like, okay, I'm not going to waste these 3 years of my life. at the cost of the next 60?
Right. Like, yes.
That's insane.
I'm not going to have these go to waste. I'm going to double, triple down and make
on
sure
misery.
On misery. I hate this. I'm going to keep doing it.
Exactly.
Show them who's who's boss.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, that's so fucked up, right?
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that? We all have this one big, juicy life on this planet. And there are so many interesting careers. Like, I wish I knew when I went to college how many different kinds of careers there were.
Oh,
like, growing up, it was like you can be a doctor, a nurse, a teacher, an accountant. Like, there were very specific jobs, and those were the jobs. And everything else, it was like, or you're a failure.
You just totally flagged where you grew up. Oh, accountant, lawyer? I'm like, wait, I didn't know any accountants. I didn't know what that was. It was doctor, policeman, fireman, army, I think, was one of them. Yeah, but I talk about this. I give this exact same example, because when you're in kindergarten, those are the jobs that you know exist.
Right.
And then, like, later on, you find out what your parents do, and you kind of understand, like, oh, my daddy does make sure that the cars that Ford builds are good quality. And then when you're in college, you're like, huh, I still have the exact same spread of jobs in front of me, except for I think I know what my friend's parents do and my parents and like a few of my uncles. But you have no idea about actual jobs.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody had told me when I was in fourth grade loving to draw that you could be an animator.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who knows? That's a job. Like,
I
did not know that these were jobs that existed. And I think that our parents do the best they can based on what they know. And then we do the best based on what we know and, you know, on and on. But my parents grew up in one bedroom apartments in Brooklyn. And my father shared a pull out sofa with his brother till the day he left and married my mom. Like, they went to Brooklyn College and
Yikes.
They thought they like they had made it. Right. So when I was going to college, it was, you know, you either get into Harvard, which I was not going to get into, or it was like go to University of Go State, whatever. Right. I went to University of Texas. I didn't know that like small liberal arts colleges existed.
I
didn't know that science and technology schools existed. I didn't know that there were other things because they did the best they could based on what they knew. And I think that's what happened. So when we let other people define success, it's going to be a smaller version of what we want it to be. In the same way that, you know, when you were going to leave law school and you told people, or when you were leaving law and you told people that, they looked at you like,
are you
crazy? And the look that they gave you wasn't, oh my God, Jordan, you can't do it. It was, oh my God, I don't know if I can do it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right? So we have this like smaller version, the smaller definition of success that we start with. And then it gets even shrunk even more by everyone else's anxieties and their fears. And nobody knows what we're capable of because we never really push ourselves to be in that uncomfortable place on like the edge of our incompetence and just figure out like, well, what if things go wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And how do I figure it out from there? And that's when you find all the good juicy stuff, right? Is in that failure moment or like, oh my God, I'm afraid. And will it work out? And I got to like dig in deep and make it happen. That's when you figure out what you really love to do, because in that moment, that do or die moment, you focus on what you really want.
Yeah. It's really hard for people, I think, to wrap their minds around this when you're in the middle of something that should be successful, because it's like, oh yeah, I totally understand what they're saying, except I can't do that because, I mean, I have three kids or whatever. I'm in this law job. I'm doing pretty well. It's not the worst. You know, I get 2 weeks off a year. I mean, I can't really normally take two whole weeks, but, you know, it's fine.
Oh, yeah.
And you hear that kind of thing a lot. And Mark Manson and I were talking about how people chasing happiness are some of the most miserable people around, to your point that I think you made before we started recording the show. Because happiness is fleeting, because it's also subjective, you can't really use it as a metric. It's completely worthless because it is fluctuating. It's like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle? You can't, if you look at it, it's moved.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
And happiness is the same way. Like, it's fleeting, it's subjective. You can't be sure if you have it right now, because if you're busy thinking about that, then you're not happy at that time. And then you think, well, in the past I've been happy, right? Well, was I? It must be. Wait, is that cognitive bias? I'm not really sure. And then you're not sure if you're ever going to find it again in the future. So you're like, well, I'm not going to gamble with that and leave my career. I'm just going to stay here because I believe that in the past I have had some happy moments, maybe.
Yeah, well, and it's also an asymptotic curve, right? So like the closer you get to it, you only can get like closer and closer and closer, but you never quite reach it because we have this, you know, the whole self-help industry that we talked about before we started, they all be happy when. Right? I'll be happy when I get the job. I'll be happy when I get the promotion. I'll be happy when I get married. I'll be happy when I have a kid. I'll be happy when I get divorced. Like, I'll be happy when. And it's all this giant happiness industrial complex that's there to teach us that we can't be happy now. Like, it's always got to be something that's just yet beyond our reach. And the thing is, we can be. We just have to define it for ourselves. I was talking to a client of mine and he was saying, well, you know, I don't drive. I don't have a driver's license. I like to walk everywhere. You know, life is great. My neighbor just got this beautiful brand new car. And I thought to myself, should I get a car? Maybe I should get a car. That's a really nice car. And I was like, well, do you want a car? He said, no. And I'm like, well, then forget about the ridiculous car, right? But we have this thing where, like, God forbid, we say, you know what? I am happy. This is good. I like what I'm doing. I'm enjoying it. I'm going to spend a little time in the space and let things percolate and grow. But I think the Heisenberg principle is a great way to think about it, because we have this notion that we shouldn't be happy. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, God forbid we are. And then if we are, well, maybe we're settling, right? It should be something that's just further.
And I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, I think we can be happy now. It's okay.
So we are taking input from people, votes from people in our lives that shouldn't have votes.
Yes.
That's kind of the way you phrased it.
Yeah, we shouldn't take votes. We should stop taking votes from people in our lives who shouldn't even have voices.
Right, yes, that. So that's really important to note. And I don't want to gloss over it, because it's really easy to put that like on an Instagram meme and then send it off into the internet. But it's true, because we don't just do that when somebody says you should be a lawyer because you argue a lot. We do it in more subtle ways. Like, it's more insidious than that. That's the obvious example. But there are other examples that are less right on the nose, where we see like our brother or friends doing something. Well, they're working in finance. Look, he just bought a boat. And then it's like, oh, okay, that's the rat race. I'm not going to do that. Maybe that's the adult version of you should be a lawyer, because it's really, really clear. But there are other things where people would say, you're being irresponsible if you work from home and start your own company right now, because you're going to make partner in 5 years. Or why would you leave the hospital job and go into private practice in a clinic in a poor area? Like, what is wrong with you? And then you start second guessing yourself. And no one's saying this to you. You're saying it to yourself, but it's based on a program that's been installed in your
hard drive. Yeah.
For a long time.
Yeah. It's when my kids were in second grade, my oldest was in second grade, one of the parents got divorced, and then another parent got divorced, and then another parent got divorced. And I remember saying to my husband, it's like divorce contagion, right? Because in the beginning was like the first person who got divorced was like, woohoo, I'm free. And all of a sudden the unhappy parents were like, oh, that looks pretty good.
Their life didn't disintegrate.
Because, you know, all we see the highlight reel, right? So we're busy seeing the highlight reel, and we're like, well, if this decision's making them happy, then maybe the decisions I've made have made me unhappy.
Yeah, like their kid's not shoplifting.
Right.
We can do it and Tom won't shoplift.
Everything will be fine,
right?
No problem. Like, nobody shows you the crystal ball from 10 years ago when Tom's on, you know, crystal meth.
Right.
But right now,
divorce causes crystal meth. That's what you should take
away. That is the takeaway from this. Like, I am a trained expert. Divorce causes crystal meth addiction. But we do have this, and it's everywhere. I mean, it's in advertising. What size should you wear? What clothes should you wear? It's in the movies that we watch. It's in the voices that are elevated on, you know, television and on radio, and the ones that aren't. We see it everywhere, and it's really difficult. So, you know, how do you figure out, right? How do you figure out what's actually going to make you happy? Should you leave the hospital job? Should you leave the corporate job? And I tell a lot of people that, you know, we get it wrong because we think that we have to have purpose, right? This like big, lofty, higher goal of purpose, like as if, you know, the only jobs that matter are jobs of service, and service only counts if it's sacrifice. So like, if you're literally not taking the shirt off your back for some kids in Haiti, like your job is just useless and you're like mailing it in. You know, so we see these friends on Instagram and on Facebook with like the pictures of them with like a bunch of, you know, black and brown faces around them as if they're holier than thou. And the truth is, it's just like fashion tourism, right?
It is. Oh my God. Don't even get me started on influencers doing that. There's a whole lot of people that have like their one or five photos from their trip to Africa, and you see them on their feed once a month because they're in the rotation. And I'm like, don't even get me started.
Yeah. Oh, I did a whole TEDx on this topic.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Like this question of, you know, we see this big, horrible thing that happens in the world, and the first thing we say is, how can I help? Right. And you're like, oh, how can I help? How can I be the center? How can I be the solution? I'm a nail, so this problem must be a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we send, you know, teddy bears to Newtown, Connecticut, or we send, you know, stuffed koalas to Australia right now, or we send, you know, winter coats to Haiti or milk to Japan, or, you know, we do this.
Meanwhile, Australia's like, you have any idea how flammable these stuffed koalas are?
Exactly. And by the way, in Japan, we don't drink a lot of dairy. So, you know, there's not a lot of milk. And it's, and the money that it costs to ship and to store and to distribute and eventually to
landfill,
to landfill all of these things, to incinerate all these teddy bears, it could be better used for other things. And so my whole TEDx is about this idea that we have to stop asking this question, how can I help, and ask a question, which is what needs to happen, right? What needs to happen so that these things don't happen again? What needs to happen so that we put out the fires? What needs to happen so that, you know, there's better buildings of earthquakes? What needs to happen so that we don't have, you know, these massive, you know, shoot-ups in schools? So, you know, the whole thing is this rail against people who are like, check, I did it. I built this cathedral to short-term comfort, and everything's wonderful now, and I've got my picture on Instagram to prove it. And it's crazy-making to me.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show. We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored in part by Felix Gray. So we all use devices, phones, tablets, computers, TVs, Kindles. They all have blue light. I'm not sure if people know what that is. I know a lot of you do, but a lot of you don't. Blue light is essentially that strain of light that comes through something like a screen, tells your brain that it's daytime out. And that can be a huge problem, especially if you're using devices at night. These huge LED displays are blasting you with light. And some of you watch TV in bed. Enter Felix Gray. If you're spending too much time in front of screens like we all pretty much are, you can get headaches, blurry vision, dry, tired eyes, trouble sleeping. I tracked that with my ring, as I'll mention later on the show. But these Felix Gray glasses, they filter out 90% of blue light in the most damaging range, eliminates 99% of glare through their lenses. And I love these things. I think they're super comfortable. They look stylish. They look like regular glasses. They don't have these sort of like weird hipster lenses or anything like that. It's kind of like sunscreen for your eyes, which actually, now that I say it out loud, doesn't sound comfortable at all, but I promise you that they are. So try them risk-free for 30 days. If your screens aren't easier on the eyes, you can send them back for a full refund. Jason?
Go to felixgrayglasses.com/Jordan for the absolute best quality blue light filtering glasses on the market. That's felixgrayglasses.com/Jordan. Do what Jordan did and start taking care of your eyes. Feel better, work smarter. Shipping and returns are totally free at Felix Gray. felixgrayglasses.com/Jordan.
This episode is also sponsored by Manscaped. So look, if you've ever nicked your junk, well, Manscaped is the way to go. These are, well, ball shavers. There's really kind of no way to sugarcoat it. I guess you could. You could say, no more nicks and scrapes with Manscaped's Lawnmower 3.0, which is what they say. This is their third generation trimmer, advanced skin-safe technology, so you can keep your bad boys nice and smooth. The Manscaped engineering team, which definitely sounds like a full-time job that any of us would be lucky to have. Well, these are premium, and I mean premium. The shavers are really nice. The packaging is really nice. The battery lasts up to 90 minutes, so you can take a longer shave. I don't really know who would need 90 full minutes to shave down under, but, you know, I don't want to go down that road. One of the coolest features is that they have an LED light, which illuminates the grooming area for a closer and more precise trimming. So you can tell kind of where you're going down there. Nice little charging stand so you can keep it as the centerpiece of your bathroom so that when someone walks in there, they can sort of mess with it and ask what it is and then drop it in horror after you tell them. So try it out for yourself. 20% off plus free shipping with the code Jordan at manscaped.com. Jason?
Get 20% off and free shipping with code Jordan at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code Jordan. Your partner, your dick, and your balls will thank you. Thanks for listening and supporting the show. And to learn more and get links to all the great discounts you just heard from our amazing sponsors, visit jordanharbinger.com/deals. Don't forget, we have a worksheet for today's episode so you can make sure you solidify your understanding of the key takeaways. That link is in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. If you'd like some tips on how to subscribe to the show, just go to jordanharbinger.com/subscribe. Subscribing to the show is absolutely free. It just means that you get all of the latest episodes downloaded automatically to your podcast player so you don't miss a single thing. And now, back to the show.
You call this the four horsemen of the success apocalypse, these insidious, unreachable ideas.
Yes.
And I love this because not only are these insidious and unreachable, and often we do it to ourselves by accident. There's a whole industry of people that are out there doing it to you on purpose. They're called influencers / self-help influencers or whatever. They're doing it on purpose because it creates a market for them and it sells this aspirational bullshit.
Yeah. And so, by the way, the worse that they make you feel by uplifting you, the more they make from you.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
That is problematic, I think.
I agree.
That's malpractice, frankly.
It is. If those people were smart enough to be licensed in anything, they should lose their license
Absolutely.
For doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was joking around with you before we started recording that I realized one day that I wrote a self-help book and not a business
Shame
book. I thought I wrote a business book. I thought I wrote a book about how do you take your career and your work and use it to make your life better, to have a happier life. And then I got called to be on the Today Show in the 9 o'clock hour, which, the Hoda and Jenna Bush hour. And the producer's like, most of the people in this hour are stay-at-home moms. And I was like, stay-at-home moms? I wrote a business book. Like, what do they care? And we went back and forth with what the topic was going to be about. And it's all about, how to ignore other people and how to, get unstuck. So I was like, all right, okay, I guess I'll do that. It's the Today Show. Like, how can I say no to that? Like, mm-hmm. I wrote a serious business book, but how can I say no to the Today Show? I guess I'll go do that. And then one after another, the market kept coming back to me. Mm-hmm. quoting back to me some of the lines. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And I called my publisher and I was like, I think I wrote a self-help book.
You accidentally wrote a self-help book.
And
yeah.
He said, duh.
Roll with it. Yeah.
So here's what I've learned about the self-help world. There is a lot of really damaging stuff in the self-help
Definitely.
World. And it is there to make you feel worse after you read it so that you'll buy the next product and the next course and the next whatever. But there's also some good stuff in there. And the good stuff is the one where they bring the help, but they demand that you bring the self. Mm. Right. So there's some where it's like they give you the help in these Instagram memes and these quotes. And frankly, half of them are plagiarized from other people.
Sure.
And they just, all you have to do is buy the mug that says, this might not be coffee, right? Like this might be wine. And then you feel good because you're like part of the tribe. But the ones that demand that you actually ask yourself hard questions, the ones that demand that you bring the self and you show up, those are the ones that I think are useful. But, it was a crushing moment when I was like, oh my God, am I a self-helper?
Yeah. Wow. Well, I was going to make a joke that involves someone else's name. Let's not do that. From what I understand, my liability insurance is good for like 1 year. It's good for one big lawsuit. Or,
so you've already had
one
that one for the year?
No. It's just...
You're not going to do
it. It's early
this.
In
this
the
is,
year.
This isn't worth it.
It's only February. I don't really want to pull the trigger on that yet.
It's got to be worth it. You got to aim big.
That's right.
Limitless.
Yes. Follow your passion is terrible advice.
That's the worst advice.
Okay. I just want to make sure we agree on that because a lot of people will be like, oh, okay. So follow my dreams. Got it. Bye.
Oh, God. So I say often on stage when I'm speaking that, follow your passion is the spoken word illegitimate sister of the live, love, laugh tattoo.
Yes, which many people have.
And then one of the organizers came up to me after the event and she was like, I have that tattoo.
Oh.
It was like, oh, ouch. Here's my problem with follow your passion. Follow your passion tells you that all you have to do is find your passion and you're going to be jolly, keen, fine. Everything's going to be roses and rainbows and unicorns singing. And the minute it gets hard, right? The minute you mess up, the minute you don't sell the deal or you don't close the pitch, whatever, the minute things don't work out, you're like, oh, I guess it must not have been my passion because I found it and I was following it, so everything should be fine.
Right.
And I think that your passion is going to gut you. I think it's going to tear you apart. I think it's going to turn you inside out and have its way with you. Your passion is going to destroy you as you try to perfect it. And people say all the time, like, tell me what you would do if you knew you couldn't fail.
Yeah.
That's your passion. And I'm like, that's horseshit. Like, tell me what you would do if you knew for sure you would fail. Mm. And yet you would do it over and over and over until you got it right. Because doesn't your passion deserve that?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, yeah.
It's kind of a useless exercise. What would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? There's a lot of things that I'm really not that,
I would sit in a room and do nothing. Like, I knew I wouldn't fail. That's not my passion, right? Mm. So I tell people that follow your passion is terrible. I want you to invest in your passion, right? Like, figure out what it's going to take. Get better at things. Be willing to fail. Be willing to fail all the time. Because, like I said, it's in that space that you're like, oh, I actually do like this. Or no, that's actually not worth it. I don't want to be uncomfortable. It's not worth it to me to do that. And that's, I think that's one of those times when you realize, like, for me in law school, like, it wasn't worth it for me to be uncomfortable. What I saw at the end of the tunnel was not interesting enough for me to struggle in that way. So I stopped. It clearly wasn't my passion. And I didn't want to invest in it. So it was pretty obvious that it wasn't going to work out.
Happiness is all too often a stand-in for fulfillment. Can you talk about that? I think we kind of touched on that in the beginning of the show, but I'd like to hit it one more time because it leads nicely into the next little bit here.
Yeah. So look, I talk to a lot of companies who are like, oh, our employees are super happy. We've got ping pong Fridays and kombucha on tap and you can bring your dog to work on Wednesdays. And I'm like, great, they're happy, but they're not engaged. Mm. They don't really care, right? And happiness is this, like, it's the short thing. Like, you can be happy in a moment, but you don't have a deep sense of fulfillment. It doesn't give you the thing that you really need to show up. I spent 20 years doing executive search and
what is that, like recruiting?
It's recruiting. So there's two different kinds of recruiting. There's the kind of search where an organization brings you in and they ask you to find a new CEO and it takes 3 to 4 to 5 months to like go and comb the universe to find the best in class to do that. And then there's staffing recruiting firms where they're, finding 50 people to, work in a call center or something. And I did the retained executive recruiting. And I never really looked for subject matter expertise. I mean, I was the CEO of the company. So by the time people got to me, they were qualified. Mm-hmm. But I looked for hunger, weight, tenacity, speed, and grit. Looked for 5 personality traits. And I did that because I understood that somebody who was actually fulfilled in their work, who actually cared about what they were doing, who wanted to invest in their passion, was willing to fight for it, were the people who had demonstrated those traits And with hunger, weight, tenacity, speed, and grit, you can figure out anything, right? Mm-hmm. You can read a book, you can watch a TED Talk, you can figure out how to do anything. Obviously, brain surgery and, you know, orbital mechanics take longer to learn. But the people who are simply satisfied with looking for the fleeting, ephemeral happiness, like the dopamine hit, don't do the hard yards to try to get really good at the passion.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I feel like that's it's true in every industry. It's and definitely not just true at the executive level. It's probably just a human.
It's a thing. Human thing. Yeah. I don't know if it takes 10,000 hours.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's like a made up thing.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. Work-life balance. Yeah. Let's speak to that a little bit, because I think that, well, first of all, people are always, they trip when I tell them I don't believe in it.
Yes.
You know, like they give me this look of pity when I say that, because they think that I'm just like slaving away, which maybe I am. I don't take much time off, but most of my days don't really feel much like work in the first place.
Yeah.
So I don't really, I feel like I don't need a lot of it. And then whenever I do get time off, I'm always like, ooh, let me read my backlog of books. Oh, I should interview this person. Let me download that and buy that. I'm always doing that. I get bored when I'm just sitting around. And some of that's just like me being neurotic. But the other part of it is me really enjoying what I'm doing.
Yeah, you're one of the lucky few.
Yeah, I think so. But I think a lot of people are worried that they don't have work-life balance. Or they either feel guilty that they don't, or they're trying to find it in this weird way. Or if they're running a company, they're like, ooh, we need like mandatory time off like one day a month. Or like, you can't come in for this. Like, oh, you have to be away from your email after 5 p.m. You saw that study, right?
Where,
like,
yes.
Some French companies or something like, you can't email your employees after work or whatever. And it's like, how much do people hate working there? Where they hate, how much do people
exactly.
hate their coworkers where it's like, hey, I got your email at 6. F*** you.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know, like, come on.
I feel like their work-life balance is this idea that is kind of outdated, right? Mm. It's this idea that you are a different person at work than you are at home. And that was all well and good, like in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and even into the 80s, where you know, went to your job and you got in your car or the bus or whatever, subway, and you went home and then you could be whoever, right? That doesn't exist now. Like, it would be very hard to find somebody who was listening to this podcast who is not on social media. And it would be very hard to find somebody who's listening to this podcast on social media who is not friends on social media with some coworker or some colleague or something mm-hmm. somehow, right? Like, that wall between the two just doesn't exist anymore. It is very difficult. And so you can't post about being in a cigar club if you're, an oncologist. You can't post about making candy as a hobby if you're a dentist, right? Like, there are just, like, you have to live a life where you don't have work-life balance, but you have work-life alignment, where the what you do and the who you are actually matched. So then it doesn't feel like you're in two different camps. We have this cult of busyness, mm-hmm. right? We're all such martyrs. We're so busy. I need more work-life balance. And I don't think the busy comes from doing too much. I think the busy comes from the costume changes in between the doing too much.
Interesting.
If you're trying to be a different person in one place and a different person in the other, that's exhausting, right?
Yeah.
That's completely exhausting. So, you know, even in the work that I do, do I have work-life balance? I don't know. I don't really have a line between work and life. Like, it is my life. Some of the things I do, I get paid for. Some of the things I do, I don't get paid for. And the more of the stuff that I do that I like, that I can get paid for, the better. But I don't have a, like, I'm at work, clock in, I'm out of work, clock out, and mm-hmm. I never think about work. There certainly have been days where I fantasize about, like, I'd like to just go flip burgers and not think about it again. But those are very few and far between.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone's ever going to have work that's like, this is glorious and I love every minute of it. But the more of the times that we like, the more of the times that we can be our very best version of ourselves, then I don't know. That to me, I'd rather have just more alignment than balance.
What about this whole leaning in thing? You wrote about this in the book too.
See, now I'm going to get
to it. Now I'm going to get used to it. But there are a lot of books, influencers, people, wisdom, whatever, speeches that are like hustle, grind, get to the top, scramble, mad dash, all this stuff. It's nonsense?
It's nonsense. It's nonsense.
Why?
So all of these things, and look, I read Lean In and I really wanted to love it. Like, I knew I was supposed to love it. I'm
you
part
are.
Of the army of women. Like, I have a uterus. Like, we should all, like, we should love Lean In.
You're disempowering other women by not loving that book.
I don't love that book. And here's the thing about it. Like, I was not upset with Sheryl Sandberg about her achievement of success and how she achieved success. Frankly, I did the same thing. I used every ounce of privilege that I had to get to where I got to. And I was successful. Youngest vice president, corner office, the whole nine yards.
Humble brag. Continue.
Well, but except I was ridiculously miserable, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I got there and I was like, all right, well, I got to the top, but the top of what, right? Like, I killed myself to get there. And I used everything I possibly could, just like she did. So like, I'm not upset with her about that. I mean, I had a lot fewer zeros behind my name doing it, but I did the same thing. And then I got there and I was like, all right, fine. I got to the top, but the top of what? And what I realized was that the definition in Lean In is that this one myopic, unflinching definition of success, that the fastest and most expedient path to the corner office is the only one that matters. And if you're not on that path, and if you're not pushing everyone else over to get to where you want to get to, then you're a failure. And all of this, you got to hustle harder and you got to rise and grind, baby. And all that stuff is such nonsense, because it says that success is defined by like having the Maserati and the G6 and all that stuff. Frankly, all these influencers standing in front of the ones they're renting or maybe they're not even renting them and they just found one on the, you know, it's not a Maserati in the street.
My friend who owns this network is probably one of the wealthiest guys in LA, and he has all these model planes of all the planes he's owned. And I was joking and I said, which one can we take? And he goes, are you kidding? I sold it. It was the worst investment ever. Who buys a plane? He was a little more colorful on his language, but he was like, it's so stupid to have this thing.
Right. So all these brilliant entrepreneurs that are so wise about money are owning planes. It's the stupidest thing. So my issue with Lean In wasn't how she achieved success. It was how she defined success, because there was a point where I realized that wasn't success for me. That wasn't how I defined it. And frankly, there are so many audiences that I speak in front of where the women and some of the men, but especially the women, come up to me in the book signing line afterwards and they're like, thank you. I hated it too, but nobody will admit it.
No. No, like, because it seems, especially, look, is it different for women? Because I feel like women have more constraints on what they're allowed to say about this kind of thing. Because I think if you say something like, hey, you know, this is kind of a bunch of bullshit that we've been fed, people are like, oh, you're taking us back to, what, should we just all be domestic now? And like, they're really, they put words in your mouth, but it still seems like you can't really do that. Whereas if I tell guys to go ahead and like find out their own path, people are like, thank you for giving me the permission to do it.
Oh yeah, it's ridiculous. And I will tell you that Limitless, it actually started, the first line of it started, I hated Lean In. It was like the very beginning of it. And my publisher called me and said, oh, you can't do that. Well, first of all, it's not an anti-Lean In book. There's so much else in the book. And that's one segment. He goes, so it's not an anti-Lean In book. So we don't want to position it that way. And he goes, and also it's kind of cruel since she lost her husband and on and on.
Yeah,
and on.
I didn't think about that.
And this is like before the anti-Facebook backlash of the last year. So at that point I was like, okay,
you were about to be a trendsetter.
Yeah. I was going to be like this horrible thing. So we took it out of the very beginning and we moved it. And then when all that came out, I was like, see?
Yeah, see, I would have been a pioneer.
But you know, but for sure, I mean, women, like, God forbid we say anything negative about another woman. And I'm not saying anything negative about her. I respect her. She's worked so hard to get where she is. What I'm saying is that her definition is not the definition for everybody. And the happiness industrial complex that I talked about, the hustler industrial complex, all it tells you is that there is one definition. And that definition is it. I mean, like, think about Gary Vee. Like, you think about all the people out there who are trying to be just like Gary Vee. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to be like him. He's Gary Vee, right? But as a woman, you want to talk about whether or not there are things that I can say and I can't say. I can't get on stage and curse a blue streak because people are like, oh, that's fair. That's uncouth.
Yes.
Like, you seem, when I was on the Today Show, I didn't curse, obviously. And I was, like, very gentle. And it was like the 9 o'clock hour. So I was wearing muted colors and sleeves and my makeup was quiet and I was very like,
stuff
I was talking
I would
to my,
never think about
talking
it
to my in-laws. It was like that kind of conversation like this. Men would never think about it. So I did that. And then lots of people signed up for my newsletter from there. And then I got emails from people that were like, you were such a nice, gentle young woman on the Today Show. Yeah. What happened to her? I got your email and the language. It was like, I was affronted by your language. Hockey sticks was the word I used. And apparently that was offensive. And I was like, oh, lady, just wait till you get the second introduction.
You might want to unsubscribe.
You might want to unsubscribe right now. But I do think men and women are able to say different things in public, period. And then about other women, about other men, absolutely. So look, I'm not here to tear down anybody. I think everybody can go out there and do whatever it is they want to do and be the best version of themselves. I'm just unsubscribing to that as my only way of measuring success.
Tell me about this consonance concept.
Yeah.
First of all, it's a great word. Nobody uses that word, probably because we don't know what it means.
Well, but see, here's the thing. You do. And everybody does. Once I explain it, they're like, oh, yeah, that's right. We all know dissonance. We've all heard that word.
That's true.
It's simply the opposite, right? So consonance is alignment. It's flow. It's harmony. So Jordan, think about...
That sounds very... what did you use? Floral crown?
Yeah, it's flower crowns. Girls are flower crowns.
There are crystal healers everywhere that know exactly what you mean.
Absolutely. So here, you're going to know exactly what I mean by this. Think about a moment when you were at your absolute very best when the things that you do really well were called upon to solve a problem at hand. And it was a problem about you, which you cared deeply. And you were rewarded for that, for solving that problem in some way that was either financially, karmically, emotionally interesting to you, meaningful to you. Think about those moments that you've had.
Yeah, I'm coming up blank here, but that's, you know, I'm trying to run a show, Dan.
So those moments, the moments when you're like, yeah, I got this, right? I can walk through fire. I know how to do it. I can do it in my sleep. And it's so fun. And I could spend every day doing this thing right here. Those are the moments when you're in consonance, right? The what you do matches who you are.
I mean, we're doing that right now, right? Isn't that what I'm doing right now?
This is what you're doing right now. I was sort of thinking that you were going to say it, like, well, doing the show, interviewing people.
I just thought that was kind of a crap example. But, I mean, this is my hope.
This is what you dedicated your career to. So I hope it's not a crap example.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I want people to stop leaning into this one singular, fastest and most expedient path, corner office hustle, get the G6, that definition. And I want them to figure out what puts them in consonance. And I want them to lean into that instead.
So how do we do that? The first step to finding this, can we practicalize it? That's a word I just made up.
Yeah, we can practicalize it. Right. I like that word. We're going to use that. That's better. See, consonant, practicalize. You've learned two new words today.
That's right.
There you go.
One of which is not a real word.
Well, who
probably
knows? I mean, you know, there's lots of new words we're discovering every day, apparently.
True.
Putting in the OED. So there are four parts of consonance. Okay? There's calling, connection, contribution, and control. And so how do you get consonance? You figure out what your own personal rubric of these four things will be. So at every age and at every life stage, you're going to want and need different amounts of these in, at different points. So should we go through the
four
of them?
Yes, let's go through those four elements.
So calling.
I don't even need to be here. You're doing great.
Calling. Calling is that thing that you love, that you want to do, that gravitational force, like the thing that wakes you up in the morning that you can't, the thing that on vacation, you're like, I'm going to listen to my backlog. I want to read these books. I want to think about who I want to have on. It's clearly for you, this discovery of interesting people doing interesting things. That's your gravitational force. It takes the form of doing it in a podcast right now. You're working on this book. There are other things that you do. It takes lots of different forms, but your calling is this sort of discovery of ideas in people, right? That's your calling. And for some people, their calling is curing cancer. And for some people, their calling is starting their own business. For some people, their calling is being a stay-at-home mom and nurturing their kids. It can be anything. It's just your calling.
Okay.
And this is where I say, like, don't give votes to people who shouldn't have voices in your life. Like, figure it out for yourself.
Yeah, because that's, like, noise, right?
Yeah, like, I don't want to purpose shame anybody. Like, if your calling is to buy a beach house and a Maserati, like, all the more power to you. Awesome. Doesn't have to be my calling. It just has to be yours. And again, at every age and at every life stage, that's going to change. And we think that, like, you have one calling in life. Like, you only have, like, this one true, you know, soulmate.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show. We'll be right back after this.
This episode is also sponsored by BetterHelp. Believe me, I understand not wanting to find a therapist. It's time-consuming, it's tedious. Even if you find someone you like, you gotta hope their office is close to where you live, cross your fingers that they have convenient parking. But with BetterHelp, those concerns do not exist anymore. BetterHelp is an online counseling service that will find you a professional therapist, and you can communicate with them from literally wherever you are, even while you're parked on your couch. BetterHelp has a network of 3,000 therapists in 50 states and all over the world who are trained to approach every possible problem. And the way that you have your sessions is up to you. Video chat, phone call, text, live chat. Not only are the licensed professionals on BetterHelp trained to handle just about anything, self-esteem concerns, relationship problems, grief, depression, and anxiety, it's almost like a qualified therapist that handles your questions like Feedback Friday, only they're not talking out of their ass like me. But if you don't love the therapist you are given, you can easily switch with no additional cost. I always feel like the process of finding a therapist and going to weekly sessions should be easier. It's 20 freaking 20. So soon we'll be able to download emotional support from the cloud to our brains. But in the meantime, it's really cool to see a company like BetterHelp crack the code on what people need. Of course, the sessions are secure, confidential, convenient, and affordable. Jason?
Our listeners get 10% off the first month with discount code Jordan. Go to betterhelp.com/Jordan. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them find the right counselor for you and get started. That's betterhelp.com/Jordan.
This episode is also sponsored by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/Jordan. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. They have powerful matching technology, which scans thousands of resumes and finds the people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Jason?
And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, our listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/Jordan. That's ZipRecruiter.com/JORDAN. ZipRecruiter.com/Jordan. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Thank you for listening and supporting the show. Your support of our advertisers keeps us on the air. To learn more and get links to all the great discounts you just heard so you can check out those amazing sponsors, visit jordanharbinger.com/deals. And don't forget the worksheet for today's episode. That link is in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. If you're listening to us on the Overcast player, please click that little star next to the episode. We really appreciate it. And now back to the show.
You're right. It is like the soulmate of jobs.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's such bull.
It's such bull. I was listening to your show with Mike Rowe, and the whole idea, like, his career is fascinating, right? And he's had 7 different callings, and he keeps changing what he does, and it's incredible. But he's being led by this one interest and discovery of just finding neat people and seeing what they're up to. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So calling is the first piece.
Great.
The second piece is connection. And connection really answers the question, does your work actually matter to that calling? Not does it matter in the world, are you like finding world peace, but what if you called into work sick tomorrow? Like, would anybody notice? Would anybody care? Like, clearly your work is
this
would be a problem. You have a lot of connection in your work. But there are people who say, yeah, I don't know that anybody would notice, right? I don't understand how the work that I'm doing right now actually impacts the company's bottom line.
Sure.
I don't know how it's helping my business grow. I talk to so many entrepreneurs who say, I started this work because my calling was that I wanted to solve whatever problem. I wanted to build whatever business. I wanted to work with these clients. And now the company's grown and all I'm doing is dealing with HR nightmares.
Ugh, yeah.
Right? Like, that's not connection. So you need to have a lot of connection to understanding, like, the work you're doing actually matters to you reaching that calling. The third piece is contribution. So contribution is a piece that we often get wrong in our, like, humble brag, faux humility society. I want to know from people, what do you want your work to contribute to your life? How much do you want to get paid? How much flexibility do you want? Will you be able to afford the lifestyle that you want, have the life you want? Are you manifesting your values on a daily basis through your work?
Manifesting is an icky word right now. They're out there saying things like, you know, imagine it and it will happen.
Yeah, so I'm not saying that.
No.
I'm saying, are you somebody who believes deeply in the environment? If you are you working for a company that's polluting the environment? Well, you're not. The act of manifesting is not I'm dreaming it's going to happen, but am I actually causing it to happen in the world? Like, how does it actually show up? Right? Are you able to bring your values to the work that you're doing so that you're not having work-life balance, but it's actually aligned with who you are? And then the last piece of contribution is really, is this contributing to the career trajectory that you want? So if you're somebody who says, you know, I'm at the age where I'm having kids right now, I want to just stay stasis in my job because I want to spend most of my energy on the home front, fine. Then you're in a job where you can stay, you know, at that level for as long as you need and nobody's giving you pressure to move up. But how is it contributing to the kind of life that you want? I had a business coach once who I went to, and I brought him all of my fancy stuff. I thought I was going to get all the gold stars, right? I brought him like the P&L forms, and I brought him the marketing materials and my next year strategic plan. It was beautiful. And I placed it all in front of us on the table, and he took it and he pushed it off the table and he was like, all right, tell me, how do you pay yourself?
Wow.
And I was like, and I gave the worst answer ever. I was like, well, I pay my people and I pay our overhead and then I reinvest some in the company and then I pay myself what's left over.
Yeah, terrible.
Terrible.
It's my dad told me when I was 12, pay yourself first.
Yeah, it was the worst. But, you know, I came out of 20 years of nonprofit and government work, and I was just like, oh, you know, I was wearing the, like, the badge of honor of purpose, right?
Yeah, and the martyrdom hat.
Yeah, the martyrdom hat, exactly. And he said, stop thinking like a girl. I was like,
dang.
Yeah. You know, I was like 36 years old at the time. So I was decidedly still, not a girl. And I was
A little too old to be. Yeah.
Yeah. So he said, tell me what kind of life you want to live. I was like, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, how often do you want to go on vacation? And when you go on vacation, do you want to stay at the Motel 6 or the Four Seasons? Do you want to fly coach? Do you want to fly first class? When you rent the car, are you getting the Maserati or the Hyundai?
Yeah.
So you think about the kind of life that you want. And then how much does that life cost?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you know what that life costs. Now you know what you need to pay yourself. Now go build a business that's going to throw off that amount of income. It was like,
it's important. Oh. That's important because what people do is they just go, I need to make a lot of, as much money as possible because that's what you do in business.
Bigger, better, faster, more.
So then you get people who have like $10 million businesses, but they live $300,000 lifestyles and they're like more than happy. So they invest and save a shitload of money. And I know these people for real. This is not like a hypothetical. And they're building a house that's like 1,700 square feet for them, their wife, and their one or two kids. And they're fine. And I'm like, why are you always stressed out? Oh, my business is this, that, and the other thing. What are you going to do? Sell it for $100 million? And then what are you going to do?
Yeah.
We're going to be having the same conversation, except you're going to have a new iPhone case. Maybe.
When I ran my last business, we brought in a very high-level Harvard-educated business, you know, MBA to facilitate it. And she had us go around the room as our executive team, go around the room in the beginning. And she said, to start the day off, the retreat off, I want to have everybody go around the room and say, how many do you think will be the ideal number of employees for this company? And everybody around the room, and it was like 25, 75, 102, 6. I mean, there's people were pulling numbers out of their ass. And she got to me at the end, and I looked up, and I was like, that's the dumbest question I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's weird.
It was a terrible question, because I could run a way more profitable business at 35 than I can at 75, and then I can run a profitable business again at 125, but there's quantities of scale.
Sure.
So just this pressure, like this hustle, grind pressure, bigger, better, faster, more, you have to keep growing and growing and growing. Actually, what kind of life do you want? Do you want the kind of life where you can leave every day at 4:30 and be home and have dinner with your family? Then that's a different kind of business
that
you're building.
True.
So, you know, I ask people to say, like, I want to know what you want this work to contribute to your life, right? So you have, what is my calling and does my work connect to it? And how is the work contributing to my life? And then the last piece is control. And control really is, how much personal agency do you actually have to impact how much that work connects to your calling and how much it's contributing to your life? So do you get a say on which teams you get placed on? Do you are you able to go into the meetings and be part of decision-making processes? Are you, if you care about your company's philanthropic endeavors, are you on that committee? Like, how much say do you get to decide where you are? Or are you just basically in the passenger seat of someone else's van the entire time? Now, I'm a serial entrepreneur. I'm a control freak of like the highest order. Like I literally have to sit on the aisle of every airplane I'm on because I just even want the illusion of control. Like if that plane's going down in a fiery ball of
flames.
Oh,
I thought it was like you're not letting people go to the bathroom.
Well, that too.
Permission.
That I don't, there's just, I'm a grown ass woman and no one is going to stop me from peeing the second that light goes off. Ding. I'm up. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you want to get by Laura Gassner-Otting on the plane, well, you better mind your P's and Q's.
I will take you down.
Yeah. This is an important point because, you know, the more I think about this, the more I'm in this area right now where I have to start thinking about these kinds of things. Probably could have used some thought earlier in the game, like before I went to
Months ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or that. But also, like, looking at this, I'm thinking of a friend of mine I just talked to recently. He essentially lives a little bit more of a consumer lifestyle than me because he has a lot more money, but he has 900 employees. And I realize that when I look at take-home pay, his is more than mine, but it's not like an order of magnitude more than mine. But he has 900 employees.
Yeah, and he has 900 headaches.
Oh my, all the time. Yeah.
Well, and that's what I said to my team. I said, we could grow the business and we could have 300 employees or 3,000 employees. But at the end of the day, when things go sideways, that lands on my plate. So are you going to tell me that I'm going to make that much more money?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I going to make that much more impact in the world? Like, what are we trying to do in this business? Are we trying to maximize profitability for ourselves? Are we trying to maximize the impact we're having for our clients? Are we trying to change the way that this work is being done in our sector? What are we aiming for, right? How are we defining success? And then I can build that business. Like if everybody around the table says, I want to make as much money as humanly possible and work as little as I need to, then we can build that business. And what you're saying is we want to make tons and tons of impact on all of our nonprofit clients who are changing the world. Then we can do that too. Like we can do whatever we want, but just the number, that's the worst metric of all.
So how do we put this into action? You've got this, I don't know if it's a system.
My next book's going to be called Wonder Hell. Actually.
Wonder Hell?
Yeah.
What's that all about?
So when the book came out, I honestly expected I'd sell six copies and five of them would be to my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly it was successful, right? Like it was, I didn't quite know what to do. And I was on an airplane on a red eye on the way back from speaking on a stage that I shared with Malala, right?
Wow.
We're talking about humble brag. Yeah, that was ridiculous. And I literally took a selfie with Malala. And about 15 minutes later, found out that my book had debuted on the Washington Post bestseller list right behind Michelle Obama. And I was like, okay, this will literally be the weirdest week of my life. Like, yeah. No matter how long I live, like, it's all downhill from now. I might as well give up. And I had that moment at like 4:30 in the morning when I couldn't sleep on the plane and I was like shoved in the center seat in between, you know, the seat wouldn't go back and I couldn't fall asleep. And I opened up my laptop and I just started writing and I was like, it's 4:28 a.m. or maybe it's 1:28 a.m. or maybe it's 7:28 a.m. I have no idea. All I know is that I am like in the space between the chaos that was yesterday and the chaos that will be tomorrow is where I am right now. And it's wonder hell. It's like, it is so amazing and humbling and special that anybody wants to spend even 5 minutes thinking about a thing that I created. That is such a wonderful feeling. And also, I have never been so tired in my entire life. It's hell. It's wonder hell. And I wrote this thing where I was like, and you know what happens in wonder hell? Wonder hell is that space in your psyche where the burden of potential like walks in and unpacks your backpack and is like, hey, motherfucker, what you got for me? Are you going to live into this, right? Like, you have just seen that you're capable of more than you thought you could do. What are you going to do with it now? And I think there's this Rubicon moment where the world opens up and you're like, I could lean into this and I could do more with it, or I could choose not to and let it pass by. And what do you do in that moment? And I think this moment of wonder hell, I think that there are people who thrive in it and who have succeeded. And I think there are people who are drowned by it. And I'm so fascinated by that moment. And I want to interview, you know, a dozen well-known individuals and hear from them what the themes are. Like, why did they do it? And I think they're probably things like you learn to get over imposter syndrome by understanding that you could teach other people what you know. Like, you could give kindness out. And the more that you use your knowledge as currency, the more that you actually love this moment. Or things like there will be people who you will have to drop who don't like you because you've outgrown the small ideas that they had for you, right? I think there are these hard moments you have to go through. So the next book I want to write is going to be called
That's actually a really useful concept. People always say, how do I know when to cut someone out of my life? There's some obvious people that, you know, like this person stole my identity. Those are bad parents or bad siblings or whatever. But there are other people in your life that are super negative or not negative at all, but insidiously keeping you small.
Absolutely. I think there are people in your life who will actively diss you, who will knock you down and to say things. And then there are people in your life who are like, oh, that's a really great shirt. It's a lot better than the one you wore last time.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there are people in your life who don't say anything at all.
Right.
Who never cheerlead you. And I think those people are just as toxic as the other ones because those are the ones who sit in the corner and they wait and they bide their time and they keep score. And they're just like, they don't show up when you're succeeding. And they also don't show up when you're failing, when you need them the most. And I think those toxic vampires are the ones that, look, we all have enough voices in our head that say like, oh, what are you doing? You're crazy. You're going to fail. This is
got at least four right now.
Yeah, we got all those voices. Like, why do we need to add on to them with people who don't have our best there? People always talk about that Jim Rohn quote that you're like the average of the five people you keep closest to. And then I just a couple weeks ago saw John Wooden, you know, the basketball coach, who said, you will never outperform your inner circle. And I thought that is such a good concept, right? So like, who do you keep around you? And the ones who are keeping score and who don't have this abundance mentality, the ones that are like kind of just sitting there, like waiting and biding their time. And I think when do you know when to cut people out? When they're not actively cheering for you all the time, good or bad. And if you don't want to actively cheer for them.
Oh, that's interesting. That's really good. It goes both ways. Most people don't think about that. So what would be the first step someone after hearing this should even take in order to like, one, start applying this, but two, figure out, like, am I doing the right thing that's the right thing for me, or am I just delusional in thinking that my current career is good for me?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. The first is anyone who's like, okay, calling, connection, contribution, control, that sounds sort of interesting. I don't really know where I sit. I have an assessment online. I think you have it in your show notes.
Yeah, it'll be in the show notes.
Right, limitlessassessment.com. And it's a fairly intense quiz. It takes about 20 minutes, but anyone who's listening can tell that I'm a fairly intense human being.
Yeah, way to unsell that.
Yeah, right. You know, it's funny because I know that I'm supposed to make these quizzes like super easy and really light, and you're supposed to feel all awesome about yourself after, and yay. But I feel like anybody who's going to take the time to actually invest in an idea and who wants to think about something and wants to improve their life, like, take it seriously. Like, it's your life. Take it seriously. Like, you can afford 20 minutes. Like, get a glass of wine or a goblet of OJ or, like, whatever your drink of choice
for
is.
For those of you that have goblets around the house.
Goblets of OJ.
After and, like, your Dungeons & Dragons tournament, go get some orange juice.
Listen, man, I played a mean game of Dungeons & Dragons back in my day. But I think, so go and take that quiz, right? At the end of it, you get a beautiful radar chart, and there's two different charts. And one shows you how much of each of the four you have in your life. And the other shows you how much of each of the four you actually want to have in your life, right? So it shows where you're not in consonants, where they don't overlap. And then there's some actual very specific practical tips. But I would say if you're sitting here and you're like, well, I'm not really sure, maybe I have it, maybe I don't, I would ask yourself, who set that definition of success for you? Like, is it yours? Is it what you've always wanted to do? I mean, you know, when I was 10 years old, I wanted to be an astronaut, right? Like, I'm clearly not an astronaut today. But why was that set for me? It was set for me because that those are the careers that I saw. Those are the ones that were put in front of me. Those are the ones who, like, when they brought people into, like, career day at school,
yeah.
Like, nobody brought in the, like, software programmer, right?
Right.
They brought in firemen.
Yeah.
That was exciting. It was sexy. It was interesting. So I would ask yourself, who set up my definition of success? What am I pursuing? And then why am I doing it, right? Is this something I really want to go after? And to really have that conversation with yourself about whether or not the things that you like to do when you're not being paid to do them, when you're on vacation, do you gravitate towards the stuff that's actually part of your work? Or are you going so completely far away because you're just dreading Sunday night? You get like that case of depression. You don't want to go in. And then it's like, well, is it the work? Is it the environment? Is it the career that I hate that I have? Is it the workplace that's just not really part of what's interesting to me? I don't like the people that are there. I don't feel like they're, you know, looking out for my best interests. Or is it me? And have my goals changed since I've changed? You know, I get asked a lot on interviews, like, what would you tell your 22-year-old self?
Yeah, which is, people ask me that too.
It's terrible advice, right? So at one point when the book came out, I did like 100 podcasts and I got a little cranky on one of them because this guy was asking me like really just wrote terrible questions.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, that's a terrible question. I said, my 22-year-old self who's listening to a podcast on my mobile device that was recorded over the internet, like none of those things existed when I was 22.
Sure.
So even if I knew who I was when I was 22, which none of us did, the world around us has changed so much that we will have to change. Like we have to do different things. We have to continue to evolve and to grow and to reevaluate. And I think just not being afraid of reevaluating, not being afraid to say, this was a path I was on. It's not the path I want to be on anymore. I mean, in 20 years of doing executive search, the most interesting, actually the only interesting people that I spoke to were the ones who took left turns and U-turns and right turns. Like the ones that just had the straight and narrow path were mm-hmm. incredibly boring. I never presented them as candidates.
It's interesting. I've got a friend in Toronto. She's a listener of the show. I was going to name her, but maybe she doesn't want me to do that. She used to work at like some corporate job making a ton of money and she quit and she's like an actress now in Toronto. And we email back and forth as I do with many show fans. I think she's happier now, but she literally can't afford good food sometimes, or food in general, because she's like a local actress. But she's happier now.
Yeah.
Having left corporate. And I think she went to like Stanford or Harvard or something like that. I can't remember now, but she wasn't exactly, she was like at Goldman Sachs. Like she wasn't just like working, you know, in the back end of a, whatever, that's going to come out rude no matter how I say it. She had a really high powered corporate job that would have resulted in a lot of money.
And probably everybody in her life told her she was insane to do it.
Yeah.
And it may be, I think we take other people's opinions of us as definitional when they're really not. They're mm-hmm. literally just opinions. And the person who tells you that you're crazy because you want to do something, by the time they've gotten their coffee at Starbucks and, you know, gotten back in their car, they've forgotten all about your conversation.
Sure.
And it sticks with us as if it's like, oh, that person thinks I'm crazy, right? But like you wouldn't, if that person gave you incredibly great, wonderful compliments about the show, would you take them seriously? Maybe, maybe not. So why are you taking their concerns about you seriously also? Because they're really just about them. So, you know, your friend who's the actress, this is where she is right now at this stage in her life. And it may be that there's another stage where she's like, you know what, this doesn't work for me anymore. It worked for me then. It caused me happiness then. Now I want to do something else. And I just, if I could wave a magic wand, for all your listeners, I would just like release them of the burden and the stress of living into everybody else's idea of what they should be and who they should be and God forbid what they can't be. And let them just define for themselves what's going to make them happy.
Laura, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Big thank you to Laura. Her book is called Limitless. Of course, we will link to that in the show notes. There's also a video of this interview on our YouTube channel at jordanharbinger.com/YouTube. Also in the show notes, there are worksheets for each episode so you can review what you've learned here from Laura Gassner-Otting. We also now have transcripts for each episode and those can be found in the show notes as well. I'm teaching you how to connect with great people and manage relationships using systems and tiny habits over at our 6-minute networking course, which is free over at jordanharbinger.com/course. The problem with kicking the can down the road and saying you're going to do this later, well, I've heard that before, but If you don't dig the well before you get thirsty, you're going to find that when you need relationships, you're probably too late to create them. These drills take just a few minutes per day. This is the stuff I wish I knew decades ago. It's not fluff. It's crucial both in your career and in your personal life, or if you're self-employed. And you can find it all for free at jordanharbinger.com/course. By the way, most of the guests on the show actually subscribe to the course and the newsletter. So come join us and you'll be in smart company. In fact, why not reach out to Laura Gassner-Odding? Tell her you enjoyed this episode of the show. Show guests love hearing from you, and you never know what might shake out of that. Speaking of building relationships, you can always reach out and or follow me on social. I'm at Jordan Harbinger on both Twitter and Instagram. This show is created in association with Podcast One. This episode was produced by Jen Harbinger and Jason DeFilippo, engineered by Jace Sanderson. Show notes and worksheets by Robert Fogarty, music by Evan Viola, and I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger. Our advice and opinions and those of our guests are their own. And yes, I'm a lawyer, but I'm not your lawyer. So do your own research before implementing anything you hear on the show. And remember, we rise by lifting others. The fee for the show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting. And I think here, anybody who's wondering if their career is the right place for them, thinking about a pivot, thinking about making a change. Of course, I hope you find something useful in every episode. So please share the show with those you love and even those you don't. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time.